mess up your name, please pardon me.
Thanks. Hi, everyone. My name's Kate Ivancic. I'm here from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm here to talk to you about how quantitative in situ mineralization columns are in sandy soils. So this mineralization column technique uses ending plant available nitrogen and starting plant available nitrogen, which is a combination of soil ammonium and nitrate, plus resin nitrogen, which is a measure of nitrogen leached out of the soil profile. So Bry and colleagues in 2002 published this method, and here I'll just walk you through what it looks like. So on the far side here, we see that there's a soil column that we use that is made out of a PVC pipe. It's 30.5 centimeters deep, 20 centimeters in diameter, and it's placed in the soil profile, excavated, inverted, and then 2 centimeters are removed from the base of that soil column. In its place, a bag of ionically charged resin beads are placed in the bottom of the soil column in a nylon sachet. The soil column is backfilled with soil, and then a mesh cap is placed on the bottom of the soil column. It's re-inverted and then very carefully placed back into the soil profile. This column is left to incubate for 30 days. And then after 30 days, we excavate the soil column, take the ending soil sample from inside of the soil column, and the ending resin concentrations to get incubated nitrogen in the system. Here are some pictures of the in-situ mineralization columns in the field. The far picture is the column just before incubation. The center picture here is the capping of the column before it's placed back into the soil profile. And the picture in the upper right-hand corner here is of the resin sachet after incubation. So Brian colleagues use this method, and we did it a little bit differently for our soils because we were looking at sandy soils in the central sands of Wisconsin. Brian colleagues used a starting soil nitrogen concentration from a sample that came from within the soil column. We were unable to do that because we were working in sandy soils, and it would have compromised the integrity of the soil column had we removed a soil sample from within. So we started with our starting soil sample from outside of the column, and then we followed the same method. We incubated for 30 days. We did this 3 times over the 90-day growing season in order to calculate mineralization throughout the 90-day growing season. We wanted to determine the effect of oat cover crops and nitrogen fertilizer on in-situ nitrogen mineralization. So we planted oat cover crop in spring in Wisconsin in April. We terminated the oat cover crop in June, and then we planted sweet corn, a 90-day crop, in June and harvested in September. And we inserted these soil columns in between the corn rows. And it's important to note that these soil columns are root exclusive, so there's no root in the soil column. We have 4 different treatments. No cover crop, no nitrogen, no cover crop with nitrogen, and then oat cover crop with and without nitrogen. Again, we had 3 30-day intervals over the 90-day growing season. So let's take a look at the mineralization data here. On the x-axis, we have the 4 treatments. On the y-axis, we have nitrogen mineralization, kilograms per hectare per 30-day incubation period. What we're comparing here are the oat cover crop versus the no oat cover crop. So we're looking at the without nitrogen and with nitrogen alongside each other. And as you can see, so this set of columns here is the 0 to 30-day incubation period. We didn't see any significant difference between oat cover crop and without oat. Also during the 30 to 60-day time period, we didn't see any significant difference in mineralization rates, nor in the 60 to 90-day incubation period. So this is a two-year study. In the first year, we had pretty low establishment of the oat cover crop. In the second year, we had 21 times the amount of oat biomass in the field. So let's take a look at that data and see if it impacted mineralization. It, in fact, did not impact mineralization in this system. In the 0 to 30 time period, nor the 30 to 60 day time period, nor the 60 to 90 day time period. This is really surprising for us. We thought that we would see, especially in 2015, a year with greater biomass, with that much greater biomass, that we would have seen a difference between oat treatments and non-oat treatments. So we thought, let's take a closer look at this and dive into the method. Let's evaluate the in-situ soil column and see how well it's measuring nitrogen leaching and how well it's capturing nitrogen applied to the system. So here we're going to take a look at the resin nitrogen data from 2014. In the far column, we have no cover crop with and without nitrogen, and the oat cover crop with and without nitrogen. The second column is the average 90-day nitrogen that was accumulated in the resin. So remember, the resin is at the base of the soil column and is a measure of the leaching in the system. We have the relative difference in the third column here. It's approximately 50 to 56 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare between the nitrogen applied treatment and the no nitrogen treatment. And looking at the percent of nitrogen applied in the last column here, we see that approximately 30% of that nitrogen that we applied, the 168 kilograms per hectare, was accumulated, it was captured by those resins, was leached out of the system. So that's 2014. 2015, the differences here are that the zero nitrogen treatments have more leaching than in 2014. Therefore, the relative difference between the nitrogen applied treatments and the no nitrogen applied treatments is also lower. It's interesting to note that the percent of nitrogen applied here that was accumulated in the resin is at 0.1% and 3%, quite low. But when we took a look at the literature, other literature that looked at leaching in sandy soils, we're actually within range. So we trust this data and we were interested in seeing actually where the rest of this nitrogen went. If it's not in the leaching, let's see if it's in the soil column itself. So we took a second look at the mineralization data. We have average 90-day mineralization here in the first column. The relative difference is around 90 or 80 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. But the percent of nitrogen applied that we captured in that soil column method was approximately 50%. So 50% of that nitrogen was lost. I also added another column here for sweet corn nitrogen uptake in the zero nitrogen treatments. So we did have some residual nitrogen in these systems that were not accounted for in the mineralization calculation. 2015, the year with greater oat biomass, we have a lower amount of nitrogen, percentage of nitrogen applied that was captured in the mineralization method. But when we looked at the data, we're actually within range. So these two studies were also completed in sandy soils, mineralization studies. The Wu and colleagues study from 2007 used the exact same method, and it was in a corn cropping system, and they saw within 50 to 75 kilograms per hectare. And so because we're within range with the mineralization data and we were within range with the resin data, we're really interested in figuring out where this nitrogen went and whether this method is even useful for nitrogen budgeting in these sandy soil systems. A couple of assumptions that we made going into this study and looking at the data is we assumed that denitrification didn't play a role here. We were working in porous sandy soils, and for denitrification to occur, we needed anaerobic conditions that we typically don't see in the central sands of Wisconsin. Also, we didn't assume that volatilization played a role here either. We applied urea by hand, and we did precision application at the top of the soil column. So we counted the number of prills per column, and we watered them in within 24 hours in both years. So we don't assume that volatilization played a role here either. Perhaps technique played a role. It's important when using this method that insertion and resin distribution are uniform. So if there's soil compaction when inserting the column, or if the resin is unevenly distributed at the base of the column, you can have preferential flow and then perhaps overestimation of over or underestimation of mineralization in these systems. Also, soil column moisture and temperature are something that are two environmental factors that can impact mineralization in this method. So overall, the takeaway from our research, we were quite happy with the in-situ mineralization core technique when looking at different treatment differences across the whole, but when taking a closer look at the quantification of mineralization in this system and the budgeting of nitrogen in this system, we need to take a closer look at field technique and see if we can zero in on those numbers a little tighter. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.